This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Sounds Choral. I'm Gabriel Crouch, Director of Choral Activities at Princeton University, and today I'm going to be celebrating the 35th anniversary of a beloved musical institution here in Princeton. That's the sound of a choir which has become a revered fixture in the musical life of Princeton. The Princeton Singers, now celebrating its 35th anniversary season and looking forward to an anniversary concert on Saturday, May 19th in Trinity Episcopal Church here in Princeton. I'll be giving information on how to obtain tickets later in the broadcast. You heard them there in their 1997 recording of Gerald Finzi's My Spirit Sang All Day. So today's show celebrates 35 years of the life of the Princeton Singers, and I'm thrilled to say that the musical director of the group since 1998, the composer and conductor Stephen Sammets, has dropped in to join me for today's show. Stephen, thank you for joining me on Sounds Choral this week, and congratulations on reaching this milestone with your illustrious group.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Of course, it's not just an anniversary season for the choir. It's a personal milestone for you too. It's your 20th season as director, correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I think one of the hallmarks of a stable and successful musical enterprise is low turnover of membership. So I guess it's a good sign that there have only been two directors in the history of the Princeton Singers. Why don't we talk a bit about the origins of the group and perhaps of your predecessor as well?
Well, John Bertolo started the group 35 years ago, and he started it as a community group based out of Trinity Church in Princeton. And for his love of all things British, and particularly British folk songs and music of the Victorian era, he wanted a group that could perform at a high level. And he founded this group of all volunteers. And over the course of time, this has become a smaller group of professional singers, 17 in all, who now sing music from all over the world and all eras of all genres. So they've expanded their repertoire to Indian music with tablas or doing music of John Cage. We're particularly happy that we perform often at the Princeton University Art Museum in programs that complement their special exhibitions. So if they're doing something of the German Baroque, we'll do German Baroque. And if they're doing French Impressionism, we're happy to supply Ravel or Debussy. So we've ranged all over the planet in terms of our repertoire at this point.
It's been a very, very big evolutionary arc then for the group, hasn't it?
It has.
John Bertolo was a name familiar to me when I was younger. When I was making that transition from singer to conductor, I actually picked up a book of his on how to run a choral program. So I guess he must have been, he must have been quite an exacting leader for the group.
He was a renowned pedagogue and also a fine teacher of the choirs at Trinity for many years. And they were renowned because they could sight sing well, which we all as choral directors enjoy when our singers can do that.
Yes, absolutely. Let's hear a little bit more music from those early days, shall we? You were talking about his legacy in Victorian and Edwardian English music. This, I guess, is one of the cornerstones of what you might think of as the second English Renaissance, the composer Sir Charles Stamford. And I think this piece was actually written for my alma mater at Trinity College, Cambridge. This is one of the three motets, Chelos Ascendit Hodie. And I believe we're also going to be hearing this piece at the concert on May the 19th. Is
yes,
that correct?
In addition to the Finzi that opened the program.
Wonderful. One of the three motets by Sir Charles Stanford, Chelos Ascendit Hodie, performed there by the Princeton Singers and conducted by John Bertolo. And I'm joined today by the current musical director of the Princeton Singers, Stephen Sametz. Stephen, John Bertolo retired in 1998, as we were discussing earlier, and the job of filling those big shoes fell, of course, to you. What do you remember of those early days with the group?
I remember them being extremely welcoming and up for an adventure. We started to explore music that was definitely not in their wheelhouse. We did Monteverdi, we did Millau, we did things in languages they hadn't anticipated doing, things from South America, things that were more contemporary. And I would say that they were very adventurous spirits, but there was certainly a bit of a learning curve and getting used to each other. But the group always had a lot of heart and a lot of intellect. I mean, we're in Princeton, and this was a very smart group, and they moved very quickly. So I think in a short period of time, they decided they could do almost anything. Soon we were doing pieces that were, I think, new to them, but they were mastering them very quickly.
You mentioned Darius Milhaud just a second ago. I believe in that first recording you made with them, there was a piece of his represented there?
Yes, this is Babylon from Les Deux Cités. This is a piece about the fall of Babylon to a poem of Paul Claudel. This is not a work that is done often.
No.
So it's a bit of a rarity in the repertoire, and we were happy to take that on early in my tenure with the Princeton Singers.
Well, it's a treat for us. Let's hear it.
Thank you.
That was the music of Darius Milhaud there, the piece Babylon from Les Deux Cités, performed by the Princeton Singers and conducted by my guest today here on Sounds Choral on WWFM, Stephen Sametz. Stephen, those of us who love choral music have also come to know the Princeton Singers as reliable purveyors of innovative and new works, as you were mentioning a little bit earlier. We should talk about your own music in just a moment, because I know that the choir has become inextricably bound together with your own life as a great composer. But let's talk for a moment about your experiences with non-conventional vocal techniques. It's all the rage nowadays with the popularity of groups like Roomful of Teeth. But in the Princeton Singers, you've been experimenting for quite a while, correct?
Well, perhaps not to the extent of Roomful of Teeth, but we're constantly trying to push the boundaries of what choirs can do and what it means to have a choral performance. There's certainly a place for choirs that still hold folders and sing conventional or masterworks of the repertoire. Both you and I recently had experience doing the Britten War Requiem, and these things will never go away. They're worthwhile and beautiful pursuits. But as composers, we like to push boundaries a little bit. So in some of my pieces, I've used digital delay with the choir, which is an electronic processing device, which actually makes the initial sound kind of goes wah, 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 yes. Wah, wah, wah. When you put that on a choir, it makes them give this kind of unearthly quality. So a few of my pieces, I've been experimenting with delays or phasing. It gives kind of a sense around experience to the audience and a kind of otherworldly quality to the piece.
How wonderful. I'm immediately thinking of an acoustically created version of that in a piece that I love very much, the John Taverner's Hymn to the Mother of God, where the two choirs are performing the same materials at the separation of a few seconds.
Yes, it's similar to that idea, in the sense that the choirs don't sing in unison and suddenly have a more freedom with the text. And the sense of time starts stretching. So the thing that we kind of depend on somewhat as listeners is a sense of pulse. And if you take that away, interesting things start to happen.
Well, let's hear something along these lines. What have you got for us now?
This is a piece I wrote for the Princeton Singers. It's always an honor to write for them because they are so talented and so versatile. And I'm attracted to the music that started the group, this British tradition that they came from. So I took a well-known piece from the repertoire, Richard Ferrant's Called Remembrance,
yes.
And decided, what could I do with that? What kind of fantasy could I create on that? So in the beginning of this piece, you'll hear a reharmonization of Ferrant's original Called Remembrance. And then after the reharmonization happens, they start phasing the initial music. And again, what happens is that there is a sense of timelessness. And in the text, where we are kind of in this sense of remembering something past, it unmoors the present a little bit and lets us kind of delve into that realm of mystery that I think the piece calls on in its own way.
Here then is Stephen Sametz's Fantasy on Ferrant's Call to Remembrance, performed by the Princeton Singers.
Thank you.
the wonderful sound of the Princeton Singers there. So Stephen Sammet's my guest today on Sounds Choral. Stephen, the promotion of new music is, in general, not just yours, is very important to the work of the Princeton Singers and to you. We know you also for the Composers Forum that you host every couple of years in collaboration with ACDA at Lehigh University. Could you just talk a little about that?
Yes, I think Princeton Singers, they are strong advocates for creation of the music of tomorrow. Every other year, and this will be happening this year at Lehigh University, June 17th to 23rd, the Princeton Singers is in residence as the lab choir for composers, aspiring composers that come from all over the world. And their assignment when they come is to have nothing written. So they may have a text, but they start from scratch. And this is a week that examines the process of creating new music. So they have the incredible luxury of every day they start to write, and then every afternoon and evening they hear what they wrote sung by the Princeton Singers. And then they go off and think, did that work or did that not work? And we talk about this process. And composers have this incredible opportunity to find out, okay, was what was in my head actually happening in the air? Then they can go revise, they get input from the singers, they can repent of what they wrote the day earlier. And each day they start to develop the pieces. And so they're writing these pieces on the Princeton Singers. And because the Princeton Singers are such good readers that they can really give very accurate and quite beautiful renderings of these newly developing works. By the end of the week, it's a very labor-intensive week, there are 20 new works that are premiered in a concert on a Saturday night. So this is hot off the press, ink still wet. Some of these composers have described it as fantasy camp for composers. This incredible realm of writing and hearing and instant feedback is unique in the country, and we're happy that we can do that every other year at Lehigh with the co-sponsorship of the American Choral Directors Association.
It sounds taxing for the singers as well, I would imagine. You know, to get their heads around 20 new pieces of music, that's no small feat.
It is mind-bending. And because we are having seminars each morning and giving lessons to the students each afternoon and then having rehearsals with the singers, and because I am conducting as much as I'm teaching, I just need a vacation after that week. But it's an incredibly creative time.
So that's June 17th to 23rd this year. Are all the places filled up now?
Just about, yes. We have about 18 out of 20 slots filled, and we really can't do more than 20 composers in a week. We have tried, and we're still in recovery.
Well, you may have those last two slots filled before you know it.
That would be great.
Of course, your work with the Princeton Singers has become synonymous with your career as one of the most successful living American composers. And indeed, your appointment with the choir took place very soon after your name had started to spread internationally, I would say, with the publication of your setting of the E.E. Cummings work In Time Of. Certainly for me, this piece is well known, and I expect it will be for other listeners as well, through the Chanticleer CD Colours of Love. But the piece exists in many different forms, doesn't it? Tell us a little bit about how this relationship took shape.
This piece has a very interesting genesis. In terms of Chanticleer, I started writing for them in 1987. I wrote them a large setting called O Llama de Amor Viva, which is a mystical vision of St. John of the Cross. This was, I think, the piece they cut their teeth on in terms of big contemporary pieces. It's a 17-minute piece. It was very challenging. And since then, they've, of course, been fearless about taking on all composers at all levels. And when I started In Time Of, it's actually written for Lehigh University Choral Arts for five choirs and three orchestras to be done in Packer Memorial Chapel at Lehigh, which is a large Victorian space, very reverberant. So you can imagine strings all over the building and five kinds of choirs divided everywhere. And then for whatever reason, I took this very large piece and distilled it for the 12 voices of Chanticleer. So it became kind of a mega piece down to the essence of the piece for 12 voices. I wasn't quite content with that, so I made a third version of this, which kind of condensed the two ideas, that the orchestras would still be involved and there would still be kind of multiple choirs. And I made it for Princeton Singers. There were always two children choirs involved. So Princeton Singers did a recording with the resident training choir of the American Boy Choir and a much condensed orchestra of four violins, organ, and harp. And in fact, this is, I have to say, my favorite version. Thank you.
That was the sound of the Princeton Singers, directed by my guest today on Sounds Choral, Stephen Sammet, along with the training choir of the American Boy Choir, directed by Vincent Metallo, in Stephen's setting of E.E. Cummings' poem, In Time Of. So, Stephen, a more recent labour of love, or a labour of duty, perhaps. You were moved by the events of Sandy Hook in December 2012, the deaths of 20 young children, 6 teachers, to create A Child's Requiem in 2013. Coincidentally, as you were mentioning earlier, our conversation today comes as we're both still recovering from the awesome burden of preparing and performing Britain's Great War Requiem. Themes of loss, innocence, and lost youth abound in Britain's work as they do in yours. And perhaps we also can sense a parallel in terms of the interplay between secular poetry and liturgical text, which exists in both these works as well. Could you tell us a little bit about the onerous burden of putting such a monumental work together?
When I decided to write a piece memorializing those who had been killed at Sandy Hook, I wanted to give voice to the peer group that was most affected, which was the children. So I put out a call nationally to elementary school teachers and church groups, and I wanted to get writings that would be children's responses to tragedy and loss. And I got about 500 responses, along with an equal number of drawings. And at the time, I had a residency at Yaddo, which is an artist colony in New York. And I went up and I just covered the walls in children's drawings. And I started to put a libretto together. And I knew I wanted to create a children's world. And I wanted to create an adult world, which would be more complex and reflect kind of what happens when we go into an age where we are not so innocent. So for that, I used the poetry of American poets, Emerson and Dickinson, H.D., a few of my own words to fill things in, and contrasted that with the children's writing. So two separate worlds started to emerge, and then soloists started to come in. There was a tenor who'd be the father, there would be a soprano who'd be the grieving mother, and of course there would be a treble soloist. So that, in fact, started to be reflected, again, it kind of almost unconsciously started to reflect the Britain War Requiem as he had created different layers of orchestras and choral groups. So there is, in fact, a core group, which there is in the orchestra of the Britain, that accompanies the soloists.
Yes.
And then there is a larger orchestra that accompanies the adult choir, which reflects the adult world. And there's a children's choir, which is also in the War Requiem. And even, in fact, the harmonic language sometimes has parallels with the War Requiem, since the father, who's the most conflicted figure in My Child's Requiem, uses harmonic language, an octatonic scale, which is, it's just a harmonic language which is found in the War Requiem and
Absolutely,
is
yes.
a little bit kind of thorny, as opposed to a very tonal language for the children's choir, which is, of course, much more innocent and harmonically kind of accessible. All of these forces started talking to each other just the way they do in the War Requiem. And the result is that I think there is a kind of collision of worlds, which is basically what I thought happened at Sandy Hook. Everything that should have been right in a child's music classroom was suddenly interrupted by the shooting that happened that day. The work, in fact, opens with a kind of gunshot in the orchestra and children kind of filing onto stage, holding hands and whispering. I think there's an iconic photograph of children being led onto the firehouse parking lot after the shooting. And they were told to hold hands and keep their eyes closed.
Yes.
And that's actually what they're whispering when they come on. This is like, keep your eyes closed, hold hands, stay in line. And I knew those were kind of the first words that would open the requiem. But what we might listen to is actually the centerpiece of the 9-movement work. And this is called A Gift. And it reflects the words of the children and the children's choir singing. The words that were sent to me from the children all over the country were so remarkable that when I created a libretto, I didn't know if I could write a piece that would reflect the words as deeply as I think they needed to be. But this is a beautiful text that came from an 8th grader that just says, a tree is tall, a branch is small, and that the message is, grieve not for the lost, but love what they left. And I thought, out of the mouths of babes comes this beautiful idea about love what they left. And I wanted to find the purest music I could think of. And so I started to harmonize a chorus over the first prelude from the Bach 48 Preludes and Fugues. So the C major, which is to me one of the purest musical statements we have. And then I kind of wrote this text around that.
Let's also hear the closing movement of this wonderful work of Stephen's. This is the epilogue from A Child's Requiem, From My Window. And Stephen, this is your version of an In Paradisum.
The tragedy was of such scope, but I didn't want to leave the work on that note. So I wanted to use an In Paradisum movement. It was similar to the Britain, where all the forces come together. And the child's text says, "From my window, there is a hill that leads to the stars."
Thank you. left.
Music from A Child's Requiem, composed by my guest today on Sounds Choral, Stephen Sammets. That was the movement at the centre of the work, performed there by the Princeton Girl Choir, conducted by Stephen Sammets, and the movement was called A Gift. Stephen, anyone who lives in Princeton will know that one of the obligatory marks in the Music Lover's calendar should be one of the performances of A Child's Christmas in Wales, which you give each year in Trinity Episcopal Church. And at this event, you weave traditional carols around text from that beloved work of Dylan Thomas. Do you enjoy this part of your work too, reconnecting with the cultural past and perhaps also reconnecting with the Princeton Singers' history as well?
Well, for many years, we have done A Child's Christmas in Wales, which is a wonderful holiday tradition. We're now actually introducing a kind of biennial approach to this, where we're going to do Child's Christmas in Wales, and sometimes we're also doing a program called A Rose in Winter. And this gives us an opportunity to do more sacred music, because A Child's Christmas in Wales is a secular story. But in both cases, I think offering something that is a Christmas gift to the community is very important, because for 35 years, Princeton Singers has been serving the greater Princeton community with what we hope is excellent choral music. And there are many, many excellent groups in the area. Of course, yours is one, and Westminster is a hallmark, and what goes on in the Princeton University Chapel and the Pro Musica, it is a very, very rich area for choral singing.
Absolutely.
And the fact that we have managed to keep a nonprofit group going for 35 years is really quite extraordinary in any realm. But I think it's a tribute to how much choral music is loved in the area. And we've created an identity of kind of a jewel of a chamber choir, that this is music that is not quite like everybody else is doing, because they tend to be either larger groups or a different kind of profile. But we have become this group of 17 professional singers that kind of gives a wide, wide range of music from all eras, medieval to music that's being written today. But I think it's also very important that we are of the community, and that we started that way as a grassroots movement when John Bertolo started it 35 years ago, and we've continued to want to be very much in the fabric of all the fine music that is in the community. And if we can offer this gift seasonally, we hope that everybody will, you know, just enjoy that time of year with us.
Wonderful. Stephen, I think we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining me today on Sounds Choral. We wish you all the success in the world for this, your anniversary season. Once again, the Princeton Singers perform their 35th anniversary concert, Make Our Garden Grow, in Trinity Episcopal Church, right here in Princeton, Saturday, May 19th at 8 p.m. Tickets and information for this concert are available at princetonsingers.org or by phone at 1-800-838-3006. Sounds Choral is produced at the studios of WWFM, the Classical Network. I'm your host, Gabriel Crouch, and the producer is David Ozenberg. You can listen to any recent Sounds Choral programming by going to our website, wwfm.org, and clicking on Classical and Webcasts. You can also support programming like this with a donation in membership at our website. Thanks so much for listening. Sounds Choral is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and wwfm.org. So let's finish today's broadcast with my guest Stephen Sammet's setting of a beloved American tune, which you'll be able to hear at the concert we were speaking of earlier. This is Shenandoah, performed once again by the Princeton Singers.
Oh, Shenandoah.